We're going to talk about Jonah today. And so I kind of tried to throw you off a couple times in the quiz. We're going to go over the answers during the sermon. But I tried to kind of throw you off a little bit to see if you could figure it out or not. You know, the Old Testament is mainly a story of God's people, the nation of Israel. Okay? So most of the Old Testament centers around them. And God was guiding this nation of Israel in a special way. So they had a special relationship with God. Now, at times, that meant some very bizarre things happened in the Old Testament. This nation of Israel conquered, sometimes destroyed, sometimes killed people of other nations. Now, there's a hard sermon to preach, and I will preach that someday, why all that had to happen. But it led to a belief in the nation of Israel that they were better than other nations. Because they had this special relationship with God, they kind of elevated themselves as more important than other people. In fact, that belief that the group of people is somehow better, more important than another group of people, has led our world to countless apostasies and terrible sin throughout our history, hasn't it? And we can just cite the people that we've killed or discriminated against because we thought one group was better than another group. More on that a little bit later. So now, that kind of sets up the story of Jonah. Because sometime in early 8th century, God calls the prophet Jonah to proclaim God's message to the city of Nineveh. Now, you could argue that Jonah was more a prophet than a missionary, but in a sense, he was a missionary. So if you answered true for the first one, I'm going to say that's the right answer. Nineveh was located in the northern part of Iraq. So this second answer for number two is true as well. Now, God had been calling prophets to preach his word to his people for decades, centuries. You know what I mean? It was just what was normal. But this was different. This is a different story because Jonah had been called to preach outside of Israel. It wasn't God's people. It was to Nineveh. And the people of Nineveh were wicked. You know? They were known for plotting against the Lord himself. Cruelty, plundering, prostitution, witchcraft. The list goes on and on. So you got this one group of people who are just evil. And then you've got this nation, which Jonah was a part of, that believed that they were special. And they started to believe that they were pretty full of themselves at that point. They certainly didn't want to be associated with this group. So Jonah is called by God to go to them. But he decides, nope, not going to do it. Not going to do it. In fact, I'm going to take off in the opposite direction, toward the city of Tarshish. Now, geographically, Tarshish and Nineveh are about as opposite as directions you could go. So it was very clear that Jonah was bolting, right? So the answer to question number three is true, too. We're getting a lot of true so far. So he rents a crew and a ship to go the other direction. But then a storm hits. Most of you know this story. And what is the crew finds out that God is not happy with something going on. And so they cast lots, right? And the lots reveal that Jonah's the problem. Now, Jonah, what does he do? He could have denied it. He could have, you know, but he didn't. He had compassion on his crew. And he confesses. And he even says, if you throw me overboard, the sea, the storm will stop. And so they do. They throw him overboard. And the storm stops. And I think Jonah is thinking at this point, I'm going to drown and I'm going to die. It's that simple. Verse 17 says something different happened. God provides a great fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah was inside the fish for 3 days. Now we're not sure. Biblical scholars struggle with whether it was a whale, or just a big fish, or we don't really know. But it was big. So the answer to question number four probably is false, because he didn't fall into a pit, though you could argue it was the pit of the stomach of the fish. But otherwise, number four is false. And all this story happens in the first chapter of Jonah. Jonah's only four chapters long. Now, what would you do if you were in the belly of a fish for 3 days? The Bible doesn't really say much. Yeah. Now, here's my theory. I think he's saying to kind of get through the time. I even have a theory on what song he sang. Okay? I'm not really much of a singer, so this is going to be bad. But, okay, I'm going to kind of have to say it. Here's what I think he's saying. Such wonderful things around you, right here on the ocean floor. Such wonderful things around you, what more is you looking for? Under the sea, under the sea. Darling, it's better, down where it's wetter, take it from me. Up on the shore they work all day, out in the sun they slave away. While we devotin', full time to floatin', under the sea. Bonus points if you know what that movie that came from. Little Mermaid. So the Bible doesn't tell us what he did for 3 days. But after 3 days and nights, something happens. So he finally has this prayer to God. So chapter 2, for the first 9 verses, there's only 10 verses in the chapter, for the first 9 verses, he prays to God. It's actually a prayer of thanksgiving, because he realized he could be dead. He admits he probably deserved to be dead. But what I think is interesting is that he doesn't mention any regret or remorse in that prayer about not going to Nineveh. He's fortunate, he's thankful that he's not dead. But he doesn't give any remorse. And then finally in verse 10, the last verse in chapter 2, the Lord commands the fish to vomit Jonah out onto land. And that's really the word, vomit. Now, we know, looking ahead in the New Testament, those 3 days in the fish and then being set free, it's kind of a foreshadowing of Jesus. His death for 3 days and then his resurrection. So you start to always kind of find Jesus in the Old Testament in places you never realized. So now imagine, what does Jonah look like? What does he feel like? What does he smell like? Oh, it's a new cologne. It's called Whale Vomit. But then God speaks to him again and says, go to the city of Nineveh and proclaim the message I give you. Now, if you just spent 3 days in the belly of a fish because you disobeyed God, what would you do? Jonah was not so dumb to disobey a second time. And the scriptures say, the answer to question number 5 is true. But it doesn't in any way say his heart was in it. It just says he went. So he gets to Nineveh, proclaims God's judgment, and Nineveh, the people of Nineveh, actually believe him. They believe Jonah. Now, we don't really know how much they changed their ways, but we do know the king took off his royal robes, put on some sackcloth, sat down in the dust, and this was a customary sign of the time of repentance, sometimes of mourning, in this case, repentance. The people heard the message. Now, you want to read there is actually a sequel to Jonah. Anybody know what the sequel is? It's Nahum. But it's not about Jonah, it's about the city of Nineveh. Okay. So, you want to read about that. That's the sequel, about Nineveh. So, God had compassion on them and did not bring destruction in the city of Nineveh, at least at that time. So the answer to question 6 is true. So we've concluded 3 chapters of the 4 chapters of Jonah. And for a lot of people, if you grew up hearing the childhood story or watching VeggieTales or whatever, for a lot of people, that's where the story ends. Because everyone should be happy at this point, right? God is happy. The people repented and turned to him. The people of Nineveh are happy. I mean, they avoided destruction. They found out who the true God was. And the prophet, the missionary, he was faithful in his calling and successful in his calling. He should be happy, but he's not. Jonah wasn't happy. Glory to the end so happily with Jonah. The answer to question 7 is false. And so we go into chapter 4. Verse 1 of chapter 4 says, Jonah was very displeased and became angry. Now he prays to God. And I'm going to give you the Pastor Dan translation. Here it is. This is what he's saying to God. I knew this would happen. God, you would give in. You're so soft and nice. I knew you would forgive them. Lord, just kill me now. Just kill me. And after this rant, God responds with a simple question to Jonah. Have you any right to be angry? And that's it. Now, if you're having a temper tantrum, and God or anyone else says you have a right to be angry, you probably don't want to hear it. You're enjoying your tantrum. So what Jonah does is he takes off. He goes and pouts underneath this little half shelter he has because the sun is really blazing that day. And Jonah was left with little protection, but he was kind of under a little bit of shear. But even God, even in the middle of his tantrum, God has compassion for Jonah. Still cares about him. And he provides this tree, this plant, this vine to grow over him to give him more shade. Which is great until the next day when God provides a worm to come and chew up that vine. And Jonah was left for no protection from the sun again. So what does Jonah say? Or what does Jonah feel like? Oh, I just want to die. Seems to be a common theme among Jonah. Oh, just let me die. Kind of dramatic fellow. So God asks a simple question again. Do you have a right to be angry about the vine? Again, why are you angry? Do you have a right to be angry? And this time Jonah just doesn't sit and listen. He responds. And he says, I do. I do have a right to be angry. And you know what? Typical Jonah, I am angry enough to die. And the book of Jonah ends with a simple question by God, a quick statement by God, and then another simple question. So here's the statement. You had more concern with this vine dying than 120,000 people who lived in it. And some of those people in Nineveh didn't even know right from wrong. Should I not be concerned about that great sin? Question. Yeah. Kind of just right in Jonah's face. So what does that say to you? What does it say to me? What are our take-homes for today? Number one. God can change anyone. If you're like me, sometimes I want to put people in a box and say, you know what? They'll never find God. They'll never know Jesus. They don't care. They don't have any remorse in what they're doing. They're too far gone. But God is in the business of transforming lives, of obstinate, irritable, depressive, angry, evil people. And you know what? That includes people who hear the message. It includes people who say the message. Sometimes it's not just the hearers of the message that need to hear. You know what I'm saying? If you've ever considered yourself a missionary, whether it's in your local town, or whether it's you've gone overseas and been a missionary for a short term or long term, you know that you go because you think you're going to help change lives there, and you realize when you come back that your life has been mostly changed. God is in the business of transforming lives. Number two, we are called to go. We are called to go. If we start thinking the gospel message is just for the people in this room, or maybe in other churches, but just within the walls of the church, we get in trouble. It's great that we come to church service. It's great that we come to discipleship classes and small groups and do all those things that we do. But they're supposed to kind of recharge you to help you go out. To go to the Ninevehs at times. We are called to go. Sometimes, I have to admit, sometimes I want the benefits of being a Christ follower, but I don't want the responsibility of being a Christ follower. But oh, if we would just trust God in all those things, we were just faithful, I don't think we'd regret any of that. It's a lot safer to stay on your chair and your couch. I've mentioned before how I love my couch. But it's not as rewarding. It's not as rewarding. Number three, we must leave the judgment to God. A lot of people in this world, and I'm sure I can be one of them, we want others to get what's coming to them. Some of us have no problem with other people going to hell. We certainly want murderers, child abusers, leaders in human trafficking to get justice. And God will bring about a day of judgment. And people will have to answer to them about their actions. But we should never want anyone to not get right with God. Not when we've been given so much grace ourselves. There are many people out there who don't know their left hand from their right. It's not for me to judge them. It's not for me to condemn them. Just as the nation of Israel thought God's love for them meant that they were special, but God, Christ died, what? For God so loved the world. He was only begotten Son. Finally, number four, stand against prejudice. I mentioned at the early part of my sermon, God is full of groups of people claiming they are better than another group of people. We have fought wars over this issue. When somehow we convince ourselves that we are above them, it gives us a sense of power, a sense of importance, of whatever it does. Every time we get a new president, a group of people threatens them. And I'm not trying to get political here. I'm just saying there are certain extreme people of Republicans who threaten Obama in a nasty way. And there are certain groups of people who do the same to Trump. Different people, but groups of people. We're still dealing with this. And when I hear about white supremacy groups, neo-Nazi rallies, my stomach turns. Are we still dealing with this stuff in America still? I read that racism is like a crocodile. It lurks below the surface of the human heart. You never know when it's going to surface, clamp down on a victim, and drag them under. Like the person who sees the splinter in the eye of her brother and sister, not realizing the board is in his or her own eye. We must bring ourselves before the Lord and ask ourselves, is there any prejudice in me? Is there any offensive way in me? And lead me, Lord, in way everlasting. If Jonah can fall, Jonah can be this rebellious as a prophet of God. I guess that means we all can be somewhere in the